Hello everybody and welcome to Trapping Across America. You probably already realized that I'm not Clint Locklear. This is Clint's show. My name is Chip Davis and I'm guest hosting tonight for Clint. A lot of you guys may remember, I believe it was last summer during convention season, that Clint was coming back from convention, maybe even nationals, and he was unloading his vehicle and actually busted a couple of his ribs. I talked to Clint yesterday and he asked me if I would fill in for him tonight on Trapper Radio because he has re-injured those ribs. So everybody kind of keep Clint in your thoughts and prayers. And Clint, we sure hope those ribs feel better real soon and get your feet back under you and your wind back in you more than anything, because those things can be really tough. Clint's a big old tough guy and it takes a lot to keep somebody like that down, but when you got broken ribs in your chest, that may be one of the few things that actually can keep them down. So we're thinking about you, buddy, and hope you feel better real soon. Clint and I have actually been talking about the possibility of hosting Trapper Radio as a guest host sometime if Clint was Bill O'Reilly. I guess that'd make me Laura Ingram. So I'm just kind of filling in here, and so we'll just kind of see how this goes. Guys, y'all be patient with us. This is brand new equipment to us. This is something I've never done before. So we're going to kind of trudge through here and cover some real interesting topics that are all related to trapping. And I think that we can put together a pretty interesting little show here. Obviously, it's not going to be Clint, but we're gonna give it a valiant effort and try to do a good job and cover some real interesting stuff. So with that said, let's kind of go on and get into some of our topics tonight. I'm sitting here with a really good friend of mine, Mr. David Gore. And David, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Well, needless to say, Chip, my name's David Gore. I'm a lifelong Mississippian, born and raised in the South. And I pretty much lived within where I was born all my life here in North Central Mississippi. I became a trapper in 1973, and I've never got tired of it. I've got tired of hunting, I've got tired of fishing, I've got tired of a lot of stuff in my life, but trapping has never been one of the things I got tired of. And I've been a trapper now for 42 years. And I'm married. I have a wife, Barbara. We have had one child who passed away in 05, Leanne. And we live way back in the sticks, in the middle of nowhere. Have to fight sunshine and air in sometimes. But that's pretty much.
Well, good deal. Well, I can tell the listenership this. I actually met you, David, here just actually only a few months ago, to be honest with you. Back in the fall, I'd met you maybe just in passing or shaking your hand maybe back years ago. And I started trapping when I was in high school, and that's been many, many moons ago. But that didn't last too long, and trapped for several years and kind of got out when fur got down. And just recently, in the last 5 or 6 years, I guess, I've really gotten back in a big way. And so it was only recently that I had taken a shift toward live market coyotes, and that's one reason, one of the main reasons among several, that I wanted to interview you. You have put together, you and a group of guys have put together something that y'all have allowed me, and I'm so humbled to be a part of this, put together a little group called the Coyote Co-op. And this thing, we're going to cover this and kind of what the Coyote Co-op is and kind of how it started, and a lot of this will be news to me, but it's just a really, really cool organization of trappers helping other trappers, and I know I have learned so much about it. So David, I'm going to kind of let you talk about how that started and kind of where we are, and we'll, you know.
Well, the Coyote Co-op, first of all, it is an organization that we put together. Me and I guess the first two of us was a guy named Jack Smith, a friend of all of mine and yours. He's the president of our Mississippi Trappers Association here, and a pretty good coyote trapper himself. And years ago, let me just ramble, if you will. Mm-hmm. to give you some insight on why I saw a need for something like a co-op. And then I'll give some of the specifics that we don't have a lot of rooms. Matter of fact, just maybe one or two. But we do have some standards we go by. And the first thing is we do have a good group of guys. It's about 10, 11 of us. And we all get along really well. We help each other out. And the goal of the co-op was to sell coyotes and create a stable market and a place where that the ones of us that wanted to trap a lot or a little, no matter how many coyotes we caught, we would have the opportunity to sell our coyotes at a stable price to stable buyers. And first of all, let me say that what I was going to say a while ago, years ago, the live market, when it come into play here in Mississippi, pretty much say the 80s, the standard for a coyote money wise was $100. You heard of people paying $125 and $150. And there grew a group of trappers that got used to that. But just like the fur market, the market on coyotes was bound to find a resting place, and we were on the high side then. And as prices began to drop, trappers began to drop out. Some of the people who owned the running pens, they thought they wanted to be in it, and they dropped out because they didn't. But we have got a pretty good group here in Mississippi of stable running pens that have a market for a product that we can supply, and that's live coyotes. We do a few fox. We don't do a lot of fox, mostly coyotes. And just as much as trying to get as much as we can money-wise, we try to create a stable market for us. The coyote co-op, one of our rules, and really the only one, as far as money-wise, we agreed to go with $50 for a live coyote. And I get a lot of the old guys that don't want to come down from $75 to $65 to $50. They say some things about me and everything, but I'll say this. I think the coyote has stood for itself as far as reputation goes. For example, this year we have already sold 878 coyotes. And we still, if we had 1,000 more today, we have orders for that. Now, one of the things being that $75, $100, $65, whatever the price was, it ain't that no more. Just like the fur market this very day ain't what it was last year and the year before and the year before that. And at the co-op, we work just as hard to keep a stable $50 and not let it go any lower as anything. And $50 I never got $50 for a coyote pelt in the fur boom in the 70s.
That's what I was just thinking. There's very few critters that we can.
That's right.
Get $50 for us.
That's right. And we have worked to keep it that. And pretty much our goal is to keep it stable. And we have to say about our feet, we guarantee if it's something on our end of the deal, we make the coyote good. We either give a coyote in return, or we'll return you $50. And I'll be honest, we very seldom ever have to do that. The buyers that we have now, we have pretty much been with for a long time, and they know us. They know what kind of traps we use, what kind of coyotes we have to sell. They're pleased with it, and we have a good, stable market. And from time to time, we do look at others wanting to get in, but right now it's not a written rule, but we do have a kind of an unwritten rule that everybody gets along so well. Just a good bunch of Christian guys that enjoy trapping, enjoy each other's company, promote good ethical trapping, promote a good ethical live market, and we try to do everything we can to build that up and keep it stable. We do a little advertising. We have t-shirts and so forth. And some of the things that you're making now, Chip, in your product line there. We have some co-op stuff there, and but we're not an organization that has a lot of rules. If that's about the only two, honesty and good business practices, and that's
one of the things that, and one of the reasons I wanted to talk about the co-op and what we're doing here. And it's not that I think that everybody across the whole country needs to develop their own cavity co-op. But what I think is really important to point out with what we're doing with the cavity co-op is the trapper cooperation, if that's such an even combination of words. I know I've learned so much, and we may even touch on a couple of those, just being a part of this co-op and a part of these guys. Number one, with me being still a little bit green to a little bit new to this live market coyote trapping, I have a ton to learn, and I have a ton more to learn, and I've already learned a ton. So I'm just full of questions, and my biggest thing sometimes is I'm afraid I ask too many questions, if that's such a thing. But one thing in particular, and David just touched on it just a second ago when you were talking about the feet and the kind of traps that we use and what we got. You know, I've actually grown to be a fan here recently of the new Bridger 3 Dogless trap, and I'm trying my best to make a co-op, make a cavity trap out of that. The problem is with that trap, the way that they mill the offset jaws, that's what I have is the offset side of that. We're putting laminations on the top, but I was still getting a few cut feet there. And I figured out through David and a couple of other co-op guys that pointed this out to me and said, look, here's your problem. It's on the inside of the jaws. It's not, I was thinking I had that taken care of with the lamination on the outside. And so they pointed that out to me. David, you use Montana, the old Montgomery's and Montana trap, right?
I'm a fan of the old Montgomery, and of course John Graham makes the Montana now, which is the old number 3 Montgomery, and it's a good trap. I'm not a fan of the rubber jaw trap, and I'm not going to go into trying to cut anybody's product, but I think the coyotes that we sell and the reputation that we have is a big boost for modified traps, trappers that care enough to modify their traps and do the best they can for the comfort of the animal. And I really think that shoots a big hole in a lot of the antis, because you can look at the feet, and you can look at our record of selling animals to these buyers, and we just don't have a lot of problem with that. And I'm not a fan of the padded jaw trap. I do like the laminated jaw trap, the Montana Montgomery number 3 being my favorite, but there's a lot of good traps out there. The MB 550 is a good live market trap. The number 2 and 3 Bridger, you have to touch them up a little bit, but that's the point, I think, Chip, is that we all care enough and we try to learn enough and dig into it enough to where we want to make it the best we can be. And when you got people doing that, they tend to try to do good on everything they do, and it's just kind of a thing. We all help each other.
That's right, and it's everything from traps to lures to you know what lures good, working good for you. And we don't all use the same stuff. You know, I use a ton of Quince lures. You know, sometimes there's a need for change. David, you actually play around with making some homemade lures, and I've caught a ton of coyotes on lures that you make too. So that's a good change up, you know, and how we use certain lures. What, you know, we were using a almost a different complex of lure back in the, when we first started this back in the early fall, I guess, than we are right now. Right. We're both trapping in Mississippi in different parts of the state. Pretty much. David's more toward the eastern side, and I'm more toward the western side. We're both in north central Mississippi, but certain things work for me there, even with that short distance, than you know, working for David. And just a place to compare notes. And I'm just using this example, guys, as to how a little bit of a cooperation, it doesn't have to be a big group with 10 or 12 folks. It can be just cooperation between you and two or three buddies to compare notes and ask questions, is why is this working for me and why is it not for you?
That's right, Chip. And I think when you look at the foundation of it, you know, trappers are going to look and say, well, y'all have sold a lot of coyotes. 878 coyotes since October the 14th is a lot of coyotes, and it is. But yes, that speaks some to the ability of the trappers, but what it speaks more to is the ability to provide a product to the baseline for the business is honesty, cooperation, integrity. And when you have that baseline on any business you have, I don't care if it's two or three of you want to sell meat. I don't know what a good example would be, but just when you go together, if you've got honesty, integrity, and a good product, giving people what they want and being honest about it and straightforward and supply them, you know, it can't help but succeed.
That's right. That's right. Well, that kind of brings us almost to a good segue to the kind of almost the second part of what I wanted to talk about. And we'll still kind of bounce around back and forth between the Coyote Co-op and the next thing. But I wanted to talk a little bit about state organizations and, you know, I guess I'm assuming, and I don't know this for a fact, I'm assuming there's a state trapping organization in every state. I would guess that's correct. Somebody may correct me from that later on, but I know for a fact that that there is a Mississippi Trappers Association. I'm proud to say that I'm a lifetime member to that now. But I'll be honest with you, up until just a recent year or two ago, I was a member of the Mississippi Trappers Association, so I had access to the annual fur auction that our state association puts on, and I really had never had it explained to me what the extra value of that was and what all else it was to be gained there, both knowledge base and you know, and marketing based, obviously through the auction and that sort of thing. David is the vice president of the Mississippi Trappers Association now, and have been president before. Is that right?
I have not been president.
Okay,
I've been a vice president and been a regional officer.
Okay, all right. But at any rate, you've been around this thing for a long time, and much more versed there, and you know, and so it's kind of still in the same thread of trapper cooperation and the strength in numbers. And so I just want you to, if you don't mind, to kind of expound a little bit about state organizations in general and kind of the value there and you know, in addition especially to the fur auctions that the organizations put on.
Chip, whenever we look at that, you get the total picture. And let me give an example. We love to trap, and we want to trap. We want to be able to market our fur or sell live market animals. Well, back in the 70s, I started in 73, and I was young then, but there came a group of people along. We just called them antis, and pretty much ruined the market for fur in America. We've all seen the models posing before where they say they'd rather go buck naked and wear fur and all this silly stuff. But we live in a world today now where that happens. And that's just one for instance. You never would have thought that could have happened in America, but you look now, where do we sell our fur? Most of our fur doesn't stay here at home, it goes abroad. And that's one reason the fur markets are looking down, because some of the countries we sell to are having trouble. And that just shows me what a group of people can do to something that I love so much. You know, my wife's wedding ring, I bought with fur money. My first dishwasher that my wife had, I bought with fur money. Three times in my life, I've had to live just by trapping, proceeds from trapping alone. And it means more to me than words can say. And if trappers don't learn to group together better than we are now, and I'm not here to throw off on anybody, and let me give you an example of that. Let me just use our association for example. We sell in Mississippi about 500 to 550 licenses, what we've been averaging. That's including non-residents. And we do have several non-residents in our state association. But we have close to 300 members in our state association. And that's a pretty good 300 up to 550. That's a pretty good average. That's over half. That's getting close to two-thirds to three-fourths. So we've done well in getting the Mississippi Trapper Association out. But when we look, for example, our first sale, what you were talking about, Chip, you thought at one time that all it was just a place to join, to have a place to sell your fur. And when we have our main meeting where everybody can come, our main business meeting fall, and they can voice whatever they have to say, they elect officers and do all the business that we have for our association for that year, that one meeting, a good average will be 65 to 70 feet. And that's not good for trappers. And what we need to do as trappers is realize that if we don't stick together and strengthen our associations, because our association, for example, we've made some big strides. We've had some impact on fur taking in the state of Mississippi as of recently. We got the season lengthened. We thought it was a need for it, especially for the ADC people, beaver and coyote people, that if they caught the occasional otter, if they caught the occasional cat, they could keep it and you wouldn't make a criminal out of it. We got that changed. We used to couldn't use anything but liquid lure. Now we can actually use what I call hard bait here. The Mississippi Trapper Association had a huge input in that. We have also tried to work smarter and not harder in this association by affiliating ourselves with people that have like interest. Timber company owners, they need trappers. Landowners need trappers. Cattlemen, people who grow livestock, they need trappers. And we have become affiliated with the Mississippi Wildlife Association. We're affiliated with Sportsman's International. We're affiliated with working on some things with the Mississippi Forestry Association and several different others. And it's been important for us to not take the mentality of a bulldog so much as maybe take the mentality of a fox and work smarter, not harder. Get affiliated with these associations. They need us. We go to their functions. We set up booths, different things. They're used to seeing us there, and they need us for different things, and we have input now. The Mississippi Trapper Association has input. We have a good legislative officer, Kenny Prince. He has done an excellent job in dealing with the state legislature, with the governor's office, lieutenant governor's office, and our commission on wildlife here in Mississippi. He has done an excellent job in dealing with them. And there's been several instances, one recently, where they were going to the department. I'm actually a game warden, my full-time job, and the department I work for was wanting to ban foot snare for a hog. Well, we looked at all that and said that we needed to at least have a discussion, and when all was said and done, it wasn't seen to be something that even needed to be done. And we had a big input in that. So there are things that you don't realize, that the average trapper don't think about, that this association benefits him and everybody, not just a certain group of people, a certain group of trappers. But we're affiliated now with other organizations that in some respect we have a like interest down the road. And they have, like it or not, there is strength in numbers. And we have an influence there now. And that influence, again, let me throw this pitch in again. It comes from knowing that the Mississippi State Trapper Association has a group of people that wants to do what's right, that are honest, that are concerned about the resource, not just filling their truck up with fur or whatever, but they're honest trappers and sportsmen and women who want to do what's right for the whole thing, the big thing, and the whole picture. And your association just means so much more than you'll ever understand. And if you're not a member, I'm going to say shame on you, and you should be a member. And if you are a member and not pushing, if you're not helping pull the wagon, you need to grab a hold and help pull it, because it benefits all of us, not just one of us, not just a few of us, but all of us.
That's so important, I think, and so many times, especially with the numbers of new trappers getting involved in this sport, I think it's so relevant and something that's so important, even for, you know, for a guy just like myself. I mean, you know, I'm one of the guys that that has not been pulling his weight for a long time. Hopefully that's soon to change, and I'm learning volumes, and I'm really looking forward to getting involved in this thing at the next level here, and trying to, I think you summed that up great, try to pull my own weight here a little bit, because, you know, if I sit back and you sit back and the next guy sits back, then all of a sudden we look around, the antis are not sitting back. What about the other thing I wanted to kind of go to and point to? I know in Mississippi, and I'm sure across the country, and I'm sure you've heard other things here, I know we have a Trapper's College that we put on for education for guys that are just getting started and different things like that. So let's you kind of expound on that a little bit.
Well, we saw the need for outreach, not only to the younger generation, because we're not recruiting trappers. Trappers is I hate to say it, but let's be honest, it's trying to be a thing of the past. We live in a different society, and we're not a rural society anymore. And the rural society did play good into trapping, but nowadays we have to kind of put forth an effort to show the young people what they're missing, what they could be interested in and get out and do, and wander in the woods and wander in the creeks and streams and the field and stuff. But not only that, our little Trapper's Camp, we call it, Trapper's College, whatever you want to call it, we have it, the opening weekend of trapping season every year, and we try to have it in a central location. And we have had such good response to that, that not only would we have 40 or 50 youngsters, we would have 25 or 30, the expression, but old men and women. We would have women and girls also come and show interest in that. And we realized that there needed to be some avenue that this association could affect young people and people who, anybody of any age who wanted to learn about trapping. And the response has been so great. You know, a time or two, we've kind of been overworked with it a little bit. We didn't have enough people to go around to help, and it tended to be on a little bit on the unorganized side, seemed like. But we had Mississippi Outdoors come out and filmed us one time. We were on the Pursuit Channel with that, on the satellite network, and we've had just a great response. And it's kind of like fishing. You can give a man a fish and fill his belly up for a night, but you can teach him to fish and he'll feed himself for life. And trapping's the same way. You can teach a young person, girl or boy, or an older person, either one, whoever it is, to trap. And about all you have to do is let them get their wheels on the ground and they go. But that outreach is an important thing, and if you're not doing it, I think you're backing up.
Right. Well, that's it's just got so much value to it, I think, and my hat's off to you guys for that. Paved the way for the younger generations, like, you know, like myself, and I think a lot of the guys are listening to this program right now, and girls. I think, you know, the folks that are you know, maybe more my age, I'm in my mid-40s, I think that you guys have set such a strong example that I know I've been challenged, and I'd kind of like to issue a challenge to other folks out there to keep this going and keep this going, because, like you said, there is definitely strength in numbers. This is something that we've got to pursue and after.
One thing you said just there, Chip, you said, and girls. I want to tell you about a little thing. It's this very shop we're sitting in my shop, by the way, here at my house, and recording this show. And about two Saturday nights ago, we had a little supper, trapper supper, about seven or eight of us gathered here, and some guys that are friends with from Ohio, they were down trapping, and some of the others, and we had a pastor friend of mine come over, and we cooked up some deer and squirrel for the normal folks to eat, but we also had a little wild hog, and we had some bobcat, and had some muskrat. And we don't have a lot of muskrat in Mississippi anymore, but I tell you what, that was as good a eating as I've had. But one of the trappers brought his young daughter, she's 13, and he was showing us all pictures of her setting her own trap. She's already caught her own fox and bobcat already by herself, and you know, she fell in here with these old men sitting here, and she eat bobcat and she eat muskrat. And girls, y'all don't feel left out in this, because I tell you what, there's some fine lady trappers out there. I've met them across the United States, and if you want something that's really rewarding and that'll give back to you, maybe you go with a guy or married to a guy that traps, and you want to be a part of that. But it's a place for you there, also.
Yeah, absolutely. I tell you, I've started, you know, through our trap modification business, Expand the Pan, I started making several conventions and shows and trapping shows and different things around. And that's one thing that I've had a little bit of my eyes open is to the amount of females that were involved in this. And I think that's awesome. I think that's great that it's not just a guys only kind of club out there somewhere.
Absolutely.
This is,
it's not. It's really not.
You know, and it's just so much enjoyment. And you know, it's hard to even quantify that, because I mean, everything from running a trap and watching the sun come up and not catching a critter to seeing a coyote spinning in a trap to everything else, it's just so much enjoyment. And it's a shame that more people don't get to realize that and see that.
Absolutely. I know I can remember the day when I sat in a deer stand and I asked myself, what in the world am I even doing here? I wished I was doing something else. I've never got in my truck. I've never went to a set where I ask myself that. I have always, it's just like Christmas time to me, going and checking those traps every morning. It's something that gets in you that it's just undescribable, and nothing can replace it in life to me.
That's right. It's kind of like on Clint's show last week, I think he was reading an email, and one thing that sticks out to me in that email that he read was, the guy says, I just have to trap. And I get that. I totally get that. I have to trap. It's we actually ended a couple of week stint on a long coyote line that we pulled yesterday. And I got up this morning saying, man, I wish I had some traps to go look at. So, yeah, because we're in between sets right now. So I totally get that. I've got to trap.
I hate to see the hot weather here in Mississippi come, because I know it means the end of trapping pretty much, and unless you're going to do some nuisance beaver work or something. But I love to trap them old coyotes, and it pretty much gets hard to do that, but I dread that time every year.
Well, it's you know, this is the first part of March right now as we're recording the show, and you know, just because we happen to be in Mississippi, I'm sure there's a lot of guys from Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Montana and New York and different places that think it's always beach weather in Mississippi. But I guess it was a week ago today, we had 8 inches of snow on the ground, which is a lot of snow for us. And
biggest snow I've seen in my 53 years.
Wow. It's, yeah, I know. I actually had text Clint during that, and I know Clint's always his go-to phrase when somebody asks him about trapping the snow is go south. And I think I text Clint a picture of the snowman that my kids had built in the yard, and about 6 inches at the time of snow on the decks of the porch. And I think I texted him, is your answer still go south? I think he said you can't get a whole lot further south without getting wet. So at any rate, but it is getting warm here, and we know that we're down to the last 30 days anyway, probably.
Probably so. It gets pretty warm, and as far as the live market goes, it gets hard to keep the animals, and sometimes it seems like they're just a big healthy animal there. If you don't sell him for a week, you may have lose some just to go out the next morning and they be gone, be dead. And I don't know whether it's some kind of a shock or whatever, but we know when it's time to quit, and we got the animal's welfare in mind, and that's what we do when it's time to quit. We hate to, but we just stop.
That's right. And that actually, I think we got time to kind of go into that. We had one more topic that I thought may be of interest. I'd like to get your opinion on it, just because, guys, if you can't tell, I'm so amazed to be sitting here with this guy. With the knowledge base he has. I'm sure just already from our conversation tonight, you've already picked up that. This is like. I don't know. I'm just in awe, because you got this knowledge base here and the stuff that I want to know and stuff I'm trying to find out. And somebody that you know is going to shoot you straight and tell you what he thinks. So one thing, and David just kind of touched on that. It is getting toward the end of the season. You know, I'm going to set at least one more time. I hope I have time between, you know, the next 30 or so days to get set up a couple of different other places I'd like to trap. But at any rate, we are getting down close to the end, and I kind of asked David as we were coming in getting set up for this, you know, what about cleanup? When I walked in his first shed here, that in his lure shop, he's got traps hanging all around the outside that he's just kind of doing some maintenance on these, and his traps everywhere, and some he's working on, some he's got ready to set just as soon as we've got a little rain spell today and tomorrow, I think. But as soon as it dries up, David, I think you're getting ready to go set again.
I'm ready to blast off. I've had a few days I've been down with the weather here and just couldn't get out what I needed to, and I'm ready to blast off.
There you go. Well, let me get kind of on to my question. When we do pull for that last time, and I've seen a lot of stuff written on this, and I've seen different, read a lot of different articles, and what about cleanup? What about storing these traps for the summer? What is your deal? How do you go about that? And what do you think is or works for you? Maybe not the best way, but for you, your best way.
Well, whenever I started trapping, there was nobody really to tell you anything. The old trappers, you couldn't pry anything out of them about how to set a trap or anything with a crowbar. But I kind of learned the old way. I do ball and wax traps. As far as what I use for coyote traps, I do ball and wax them. I just don't care for any other way. Is there some other ways to do? Sure, there are some water-based cold dips that you can use. Now, I'm kind of starting at the beginning, and we're talking about closing up, but I wanted to kind of lay the foundation for what I believe, where you'll understand me. I do not like, I like the gas-based dips fine for water traps, but I don't like them for coyotes or land traps. Now, when I pull, and I know a ton of guys, and it works, I guess, for them just fine. But my daddy raised me to take care of whatever I had, because we didn't always have a lot. We had what we needed, but you had to take care of it. And I think that nothing works better than taking care of traps than boiling and using some lye. You can still find lye. It's hard to do, but you can still get it, and I've got a couple of country stores that can still get me 100% lye. And whenever I pull for the year, unless my leg is broken or things are mighty bad, I boil my traps, and I use usually to one half of a 55-gallon drum cut in half, I use two cans of lye, and I fill it with traps and then fill it with water. And I boil it at least 2 hours. And that gets rid of all the old wax, that gets rid of all the rust, other than the stuff that shouldn't have got on there to begin with, if you're taking care of it. And once you get those traps boiled, I'll take them out and wash them down real good. And they're, you really don't need to put them up then. I put mine in garbage cans, and I store them with a lid on outside under the shed. Now, I have seen guys do everything from roll in and take a rake and rake them out in the yard and leave them to you name it. And a trap is an investment. It's a tool just like a hammer or a saw or a computer or whatever. It's a tool of our trade, and I think to take care of it, you need to put it up with a little bit of care. I do like to go ahead and boil my traps after that and dye them. Now, I'm not going to tell you have to wax them. If you want to wax them, my experience with waxing before the summer is it gets so blooming hot here, sometimes that wax will melt and you'll have a glob of gook in your garbage can. So I do wait till the fall to wax. But for the most part, I take those traps and I blast them off with a pressure washer, put them in and boil them in with lye. And I know y'all saying, well, that's a lot of work. You can just blast them off with water. You can dip them in Formula One is a great coal-based dip. I use it during the wintertime when I'm trapping, and I don't have time to boil, and traps get so nasty. I'll bring them in and clean them up when they get the old red rust on them. Get skunked up good, whatever. I'll bring them in, clean them up, and then I'll dip them in that Formula One. Also, I believe Dakota Line has come out with a water-based dip that I don't use it, but some of the guys in the co-op do, and they have good results with that. Mm-hmm. So it's not the only way, but I will say this, to get rid of rust on something metal, nothing beats boiling in lye for a couple hours, and then make sure you rinse that off when you take them out and let them dry good, and then I do like to dye them after that. Now the waxing, I'm not going to say you have to, but now as far as scent goes and all that, I think I never tell anybody I do that for reasons of scent or cleanliness, as far as going to the set and hauling your dirt off and all of this old stuff. I believe it's just, I don't know, it was something, it's not necessary.
I know, and I've learned a lot. Even at the start of this year, I was rubber boots and rubber gloves.
Yeah.
Had a chance to ride with you one day in your leather boots and leather gloves and all that. I learned a lot there, and that was, you know, in some situations I felt like there was some benefit there, but it just depends on what works for you, I think. And right. Just like the trap stuff, or we're spray paint guys. I learned that from Clint. I spray paint them, I dip them in Clint's full metal jacket. I've had great luck with that product, but it's still at the end of the season, I'm going to try this lye boil too. In addition to that, I'm still going to touch them up with spray paint. I'm still going to dip them in the full metal jacket, but
I think that's fine. It's not just one way.
That's right.
And
that's right. Yep.
If I sit here and told you it was one way to clean your traps and take care of them, I'd be wrong. And just like if I sit here and tell you it's one way to catch a critter, you know, we all have to learn the basics, but we each get our style of doing. And I believe Wayne Derrick said that here at the Southern Regional in Arkansas this year. You know, we all have our own way of doing it, and it's whatever works best for you. But I guess the bottom line would just be, you need to get the rust off of traps over before the summer, or when you put them up, they can be de-rusted and you can take care of them. That's mm-hmm. the main thing. Whatever you can do to get to that point, I'd say do it.
A quick little sideline deal, I've been kind of reviewing a lot of different resources here. You turned me on to Craig O'Gorman, and I've watched several of his tapes. I know this may be getting a little bit off subject of exactly what we're talking about, but I think it's still relevant. He mentioned the red rust and how mm-hmm. coyotes can smell the red rust, and
right.
Kind of want you to touch on that. Just I learned a real valuable lesson right there, and because I did, I think maybe it's relevant to other guys listening to this program. So I'm gonna let you touch on the red rust real quick.
As far as scent control, I'm not, I dip snuff, and I do spit around the sets. I don't think there's no way that a cow's not gonna know you're there. And I do wear leather boots and leather gloves. When it gets too wet, I may put on a pair of rubber gloves, but I try not to let folks see me do that. But the red rust, there's two things that, as far as being clean, you know, if you get something on your trap and a coyote smells it, such as lure bait, he's gonna dig it up. That's what he does for a living. He's a canine. But we can be careful and not do that. Skunk, you know, my experience with skunks, I don't have that bad. And I may or may not clean it up. If it's terrible, I'm gonna clean it up, but just a little bit. I have not had that much trouble with it. But there again, that's up to you if you want to clean it. But red rust, that's the third thing. That's the three things I've mentioned that I do think you can have problems with, because I have at times. Red rust, if you look at it, and I don't know what the scientific term for it is, whether it's different from any other rust, but that old red rust that gets on your traps after they've really been used, a coon or two's got in them and shined them up, and they've crushed it over with rust, and this, that, and the other. If you'll smell, you can actually smell that yourself. And I know a coyote can, and I know for a fact that they'll dig your trap up when they smell that. Now, I'm not saying that they necessarily know what it is, but it does give off quite an odor. And when I get that trap in that shape, I'm trapping it, needless to say, at that time of the year. I bring those traps home. I've got more traps in garbage cans that I can be using, but those traps, I'll take them, I'll power wash them off. And if I have to do any brushing at all, which is usually not very much, don't have to take a wire brush hardly at all, but if you want to, you can, and knock that off. And I like the Jameson's Formula One. It's a water-based dip. In a 5-gallon bucket, I'll put 2 quarts, and then I'll bring it up to water with the water level up to about 3/4 full of a 5-gallon bucket, and that'll do me a season. And when I get to that point with the old red rust, that's what I do, because I know if I just keep on going, I'm asking for trouble. And when you set a coyote trap, it's no use to helping him out, because he can learn. He's not some super creature that you can't catch, but he can learn, and if you teach him, he will. And that's how he's done as well as he has. And I would say that about red rust. Just be on the watch out for that. And certain soils cause it. We have red clay here a lot in the hills. Now in the farmland, cropland, it's a sandy loam that you don't have to worry about much. But something in the red clay is corrosive. I know, Chip, over in your area, the old blue gumbo. It's the same way. It's something about clay-based soils that tend to create that on your traps. That is one thing you can watch and do and clean up to help yourself out there. And it takes care of your traps too.
Right, right. Well, good deal. Well, we'll kind of start bringing the show to a close here a little bit. I think we've covered some really, really, really valuable information. I know I've learned a lot just sitting here being with David. You know, I was reading an article here just a few days ago, and don't even really recall what the article was about, but it was not in a Trapper magazine, but something jumped out there. It was about becoming a master at something. And the author of that article that I was reading had quoted some figures, and he said that on average, with just about any task, it'll take you 10,000 hours of repetition of the same task before you achieve mastery of that. And I kind of started thinking about that, you know, 10,000 hours, what is that? It's kind of, you know, it's not really relative. We don't think of time in that ways. And, you know, I just kind of did a quick math, and at 10 hours a day, that's 1,000 days of doing something to get to the level of mastery. 1,000 days, that's still kind of a little bit out of my brain's grasp. That's 142 weeks, 7 days a week, 10 hours a day. And to even put it where I can understand a little bit more, every single day working 10 hours at one task, it'll take you 2 years, 8.5 months to get to the level of mastery. And it's just so much that I've learned, David, from you and from this conversation, and not only this conversation, but all the I've just what I feel so fortunate to be able to talk to you almost every day and ask you these questions, and because you're truly approaching that master stage, and I think it does well for guys like myself to find somebody like you that's willing to help us out, and boy, I've learned so much from guys like you and guys like Clint, and watching guys like O'Gorman and different ones like us. I spent some time with Randy Smith in Louisiana last year. These guys are just, you know, if you get to grab on to one of these guys, like David or Clint or some of these, pay attention, folks. You'll learn so much, and I know I'm trying to get our website up and going for Expand a Plan, and it will be online here hopefully not long after the show airs. Maybe next week we'll be up. It's going to be expandapantraps.com. But one of the things that we mentioned in there has a lot to do with this is you've got to, the information's out there now. The gatekeepers are gone. We can find this out. It helps so much so when you can latch on to one of these guys and learn from them. Learning's fun, and learning's what makes what we do fun.
I'm humbled to even be on this show, and I'm thankful and humble, but I certainly don't. I'm gonna have to get on Chip about saying that about me, but I certainly don't think I know it all. And one of the greatest lessons trapping has taught me is humility, because once you get too big for your britches, the critters are gonna teach you then, because you're gonna stop catching them, because they live out there and they do what they do every day of their life, all day, all night, for a living. And trapping has taught me humility, if nothing else. And I'm so thankful to be a trapper. God has blessed me in it, and I'm thankful to Him for letting me be a trapper. And I still learn something every time I go. And that's something my dad taught me, to always keep my mouth shut and my ears open. And trapping, it teaches me something every time. When I may make a good run at something for a while on the couch and everything, but then there comes that one that can make you pull your hair out and scratch your elbows and your head and everything else. But I'm truly humbled and thankful to be a guest on the show today, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you so much for your time, David. I appreciate all the insight. I know we've learned a lot from you. We really appreciate it. Guys, just kind of in closing, find you a group of guys that ours happens to be the co-op. Put you two or three folks together like that. Put your heads together. I think the whole group will be better as a result of that. You can learn stuff like that. Get involved with your state organizations. This is our battlefront. This is why we will. We'll be able to continue this sport. Is power in numbers. Get involved with that. Hopefully you picked up some tips on the trap cleanup. David, we sure appreciate it. We're going to go ahead and close. It's the rain that we're talking about is beating down pretty hard, so I'm not sure how it's going to affect this recording here, but we sure appreciate it. And
thank you.
And Clint, go ahead and take care of those ribs and wrap them up. Hope you're feeling better, and hopefully Clint, you'll be back at this seat next week and for Trapper Radio in another week. All right, guys, thanks a bunch, and we'll talk to you next week.